I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to a somewhat emergency episode of the Shamrock, but in a good way, which is not the kind of podcast we record in Notre Dame world very often. I'm Pete Sampson, joined by, as always, by Matt Fortuna, and on the Cincinnati beat, Justin Williams from The Athletic, who knows Notre Dame's new defensive coordinator, Marcus Freeman, very well. So, Justin, thanks for making some time for us on Friday night to talk a little college football. And I guess just, you know, what was your reaction when you found out the news that Marcus was headed to South Bend? Maybe less so that it was a surprise that Notre Dame was interested. We all knew that was coming, but the fact that it wrapped up today, when it did and how it did, I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah, no, first of all, thanks for having me. Emotions are still a little raw. You know, you guys are very fortunate. You're getting a good one in Marcus, but I'm not surprised that this was the end result. I think how we got here was really interesting, and I'm curious. Hopefully at some point in the future, we'll get all the details, but Notre Dame just makes so much sense for kind of like the landing spot for Marcus. And, you know, it's been pretty public that he was interviewing there this week, along with LSU. And, you know, I know he had interest from other places, and I know he was not, it wasn't a situation where he was like definitely gone. You know, early in the week, sources were saying that he was still like leaning towards coming back to Cincinnati. Obviously he's really close with Luke Fickell. So I know for people outside of, you know, following UC, that seems like ridiculous that you would turn down LSU or Notre Dame to go back to Cincinnati. And obviously he didn't, but he turned down Michigan State last year after Mel Tucker got hired and turned down a big raise to stay at Cincinnati after Luke Fickell had turned down the head coaching job. And he's taken a lot of cues from Luke in terms of, you know, Luke learned a lot from that year. He was at Ohio State where he was the interim coach, and for a long time, you know, was looking for the right head coaching job. When he was hired, his introductory press conference, Marcus Freeman was there at Cincinnati before it was even announced that he was part of the staff. So like he's been Luke's guy all along. Obviously he was his coach when he was at Ohio State. So they're really close, and I knew that was going to be a big deal for him. It was going to be tough for him to leave Luke and go somewhere else. But he's unbelievably talented and he's really young, and he was going to end up in this position one way or another. I mean, I think he's going to be a head coach at a big time program very soon. I know he was interviewed by Illinois and was high on their list before they just hired Bielema. So, but if you're looking at the fit for Notre Dame, he's still in this Midwest region that he knows really well in terms of recruiting, and he's a great recruiter. So from Notre Dame's perspective, that makes a ton of sense too, because I know that's, you know, all the talk with them is always how do they compete with Bama and Clemson and Ohio State and things like that. And in my mind, Freeman is like the type of recruiter that can help them do that. So they get a great one in that. And then just he kind of fit on the field. You know, I know, Pete, you wrote about this a little bit, but Freeman's not like a real scheme heavy guy. He can kind of adapt to whatever the personnel is and the type of athletes he has, which I think is another big benefit for him. But I also don't think he's not hesitant to go somewhere if, you know, if that's what fits with the players that he inherits, or if that's kind of the Notre Dame system under Brian Kelly. So I think he's going to fit there in a lot of ways. And you know, Mike Mickens, he obviously coached at Cincinnati, but they were high school teammates. They've known each other almost their entire lives. They grew up together in Dayton, Ohio. And so if he was going to leave working for Luke Fickell to go work for someone else and still be a coordinator, I think the Mickens thing is a huge piece of this, because Mickens is there, their families know each other. So when you weigh all those things, I would not have been shocked if he would have come back to Cincy. I wouldn't have been shocked if he went to LSU or Oregon or any of these places that, you know, are going to open up. But just looking at all the factors, Notre Dame always made the most sense. And I'm sure once he got on campus and talked to them, he kind of felt that way too.
Justin, you mentioned Michigan State, you mentioned Illinois. I believe he turned down an assistant job with the Tennessee Titans last year. There's LSU today. I'm sure there are others that you can share or maybe not share, but I'm sure there are others anytime there's a coach of that caliber. Knowing him the way you know him, what do you think probably did win Notre Dame over? Because usually it's the candidate trying to win over the person they're interviewing with. And in this case, this was a recruit, basically, that Notre Dame had to go out and outfox other schools to get. What do you think probably attracted Freeman to Notre Dame?
Yeah, I mean, he got re-recruited this week as a coach. You know, he went to Notre Dame. They flew him down to LSU. And I know there were other places trying to get in touch with him. So he definitely got the full, like, adult recruitment treatment. I think part of it, I was talking to somebody earlier this week, and the way they put it was, it almost feels like it's impossible for him to fail there because he knows the Midwest so well, because he kind of understands this region of football and the connections that are already there. I mean, it's not like he has really any real connection to Brian Kelly, but the fact that Brian Kelly came from Cincinnati, there's some people that had ties to Cincinnati before that with Mickens being there. So I think it was really in his comfort zone. And as hard as it was, and I think it was really hard for him to leave Cincinnati, it makes sense that he would go somewhere that was comfortable as opposed to a place like LSU. I think he would have been really successful if he went to LSU, but it would be a big step outside of his comfort zone. And, you know, I think he understands that he's still really young. He still has a lot of coaching in front of him and he wants to be a head coach. He's talked about that. And every decision that he's made the past couple of years is what gives me the best chance to be a head coach in college. And I think some of those, you know, Michigan State last year, he got offers from places like Old Dominion and things like that, where he could have gone and been a head coach. I was always pushing him to, like, wait out Frank Solich at my alma mater of Ohio University and go coach out there. But I think he moved beyond those kind of places the past couple years. But I think there's a little bit of a disconnect, wrongly in my opinion, with a lot of the power conference schools of hiring a group of five assistant. I mean, I don't equate a Cincinnati defensive coordinator with most other group of five schools, but I think for a lot of administrators and athletic directors, that feels like a big leap for them. And I don't know that, you know, I mean, Illinois, I don't know that that was the reason why it didn't work out there. It seemed like Bielema was a good fit for them, but I'm sure at some point in his mind, he knew this will give me a better chance at some point down the road. I'm not saying he's going to be like looking to just jump away from Notre Dame the first chance he gets, but it's pretty obvious everyone wants to be a head coach and he's that way too. And I think he realized this was a good step up within his comfort zone. He gets to be at the highest level of college football. And for someone who's recruited and coached as well as he had, I'm sure he welcomes that challenge to do it on that kind of level. And so again, I think there was just so many factors that when he sat down and weighed it, they made sense. And that's why, as much as there was like all these reports and whispers about LSU closing in on him today and all those kind of things, it's not surprising at the end he ended up at Notre Dame, because it always just made the most sense to me.
What about just like defensive structure? You know, we've talked about this and just sort of he's flexible. You know, if you've written about it, you had a good sort of, I think it was, you know, final thoughts film review maybe after the Memphis game this year, where really sort of shut down a high flying offense. You know, he's defended triple option, which is significant because Notre Dame most years plays Navy. So you got to have that, but you got to have the ability to just shut down the air raid that USC runs. You got to have the ability to match up with Georgia or Michigan, or, you know, somebody who runs a power run game. And then you also got to deal with Clemson and Alabama with like their five-star prospects all over the place. So like, how, I'm curious, like covering him, how quickly it became clear that, man, this guy has a lot in his bag schematically. And then also I was interested, like how much of that is Fickell versus how much of that is Freeman? Cause you know, obviously they're both defensive guys. So like how does those pieces fit together?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'm interested in the Fickell-Freeman dynamic and how that looks in Cincinnati's side this year. But I know they work together really close. I mean, Fickell's one of those head coaches who, during practice, he's on the defensive side. So he's definitely more involved in that. But I don't think he was, like, too domineering or anything on the defensive side. With Marcus, yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy. He's recruited really well, and that's been a big part of like the way they played this season and kind of the turnaround at Cincinnati. But if you look back to that 2018 season where the Fickell's second year, Freeman's second year, they went from 4 wins to 11 wins and were kind of a totally a huge surprise. No one really saw that coming. And the reason they were able to do it because they did it with guys they inherited from the previous regime, which was Tommy Tuberville, interestingly enough. But they basically just got guys who were already on the roster. Some of them, you know, who were talented or had good offers coming out, but some of them were two-star, you know, low three-star players. And they just found ways to, you know, maximize their talent and get the most out of them. Some of that was moving guys around. They created this, you know, or didn't create a sniper position, which is kind of a hybrid linebacker safety that they built a defense that had that position and moved some guys from defensive end to middle linebacker and safety to the sniper position. That just made more sense and fit there. They moved guys from receiver to cornerback. So they were always open to doing that kind of thing, pulling guys from the other side of the ball or moving them around. And then I think the other thing was Freeman's never really been scheme heavy. I mean, he can, you know, draw up different types of schemes for different teams, but it's not like they play within some box. You know, I did a piece earlier this year when asked one of the defensive players in Cincinnati, like, how would you describe the scheme? And he just said, like, it's not really a scheme. You kind of go out there and play fast and play instinctive. And that's what he wants. He's okay if players make a mistake, if they're like being aggressive and, you know, playing with their instincts as opposed to trying to think too much. And so I think that's why they were able to get so much out of the older players they inherited, because they understood football and they understood how to play, but they didn't try and kind of put them in a box. They just let them go out there and run. So yeah, the other thing he always really does is he loves to like pull out one little trick up his sleeve, especially for big games. So they've been playing a 3-3-5 on defense the past 2 years, and he broke that out against UCF last year in 2019, and they got a big upset win. In large part, I think because they kind of switched to that and played that formation for the first time against them. And then he just liked it so much that he stuck with it the rest of the year and then this season. So to me, that was like the perfect encapsulation of Marcus Freeman, is that he puts this plan together, breaks it out for a big game, they get an upset, but then he's also like, hey, this works. I'm going to stick with it and just see where it goes. And that to me was like the best example of kind of what you're getting with him.
Pete and I talked a little bit about this when the move happened, and you know, I was going to put this on Twitter, but people would have taken it the wrong way. But I mean this with all sincerity. Like, this is the biggest recruiting win for Notre Dame in a long time. I mean, Jalen Smith, maybe Manti Te'o, as Pete said before, you know, Jalen Smith is already probably going to go to Notre Dame. So it wasn't like they came out at the 11th hour and outfoxed someone to get him. We just haven't seen Notre Dame land that big fish, so to speak, as a player or a coach, as far as there are a lot of people who want them. Notre Dame's going to either pay more money or do whatever it is that they did to ultimately get that guy. I'm curious, from Marcus Freeman's perspective, when the world gets back to normal, recruiting-wise, what's his territory? Obviously, Ohio and Indiana is where he spent all his life, but you know, what parts of the country is he really strong at, and what do you expect to see from him, especially at a program that recruits at the national level?
Yeah, I mean, if there's anybody who's half decent at football in Dayton, like, Marcus is going to get him, and he probably knows their family. It's a little bit of a tangent, but there's a kid from the Dayton area who actually went to Miami, Ohio University and played basketball for a couple years, and he was looking to move out of that and go back to football, and he was just going to stay at Miami and play at Miami. And his mom, the player's mom, ran into Marcus Freeman's dad one day, like in town in Dayton. And it was Darius Harper is the right tackle. And he's like, oh, Darius is thinking about switching to football. Well, he ended up being the starting right tackle for the Bearcats for the past 2 years because like Marcus made it happen. So that was obviously a different situation than an offensive player, but anybody coming out of that area, he's going to have ties to. And really, yeah, Ohio. I mean, Central Ohio, he played at Ohio State. He's been coaching at Cincinnati now for 4 years. He's gotten a bunch of players from Northern Ohio as well. So really anyone in this kind of Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, Kentucky area, he's probably going to have at least a pretty good understanding or sense of. But what we've seen him do the past couple of years is go out and get some guys from beyond that. Melvin Jordan, who's a four-star linebacker, top 300 player, I think was committed to Florida State for a while from I think he's either from Florida or Texas, but he's committed, or excuse me, committed to the 2022 class for Cincinnati. Now we'll see if how much that holds with Marcus Freeman being gone, because Marcus was a big reason why he went there. But as he's gotten, as Cincinnati's profile has risen with the way they played the past couple of years and the way their defense has played, he's been able to kind of go out and branch out and get guys. And a lot of that is just because of the way he can connect with people. David Jones is a true freshman linebacker at Cincinnati this year, a local Cincinnati kid, good prospect, you know, mid-range three-star prospect, but by no means like a, you know, top-end coveted person Cincinnati wouldn't have ever had a chance to get a shot at anyways. But Marcus Freeman learned sign language because David Jones liked sign language and used that as like just, you know, kind of a hokey way, but also to just show David how serious he was. And I talked to David, you know, after he signed in the 2020 class, and he was like, yeah, you know, it was kind of goofy, but Marcus came by and did a school visit one day and I was in sign language class, and he remembered that and went home and learned how to sign and then created a video and sent it to me like, I want you to come to Cincinnati. So that's just like a little bit of an example of how seriously he takes it, but also how he can connect with people. So he has the region that he's familiar with, Ohio specifically, but the biggest thing with him is just how he's able to build relationships with kids. And it's been pretty incredible just from, you know, the stories that I've heard. And so I think when you put those two things together, being at Notre Dame, that's really going to benefit him.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I've only talked to Marcus once, and it was for a story on Mike Mickens after he got hired away. But I was definitely struck by like that relationship. And I don't know, do you get a sense like that was critical in this? That, you know, if Notre Dame did not, like, obviously have the Midwest connection, Marcus has been the Midwest his whole life. But like, if Mickens wasn't here to sort of vouch for Notre Dame, like, do you think this happens?
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess it certainly didn't hurt. You know, like I said, he's really close with Fickell. And I know that was always going to be a challenge for him to leave Cincinnati. And I think it helped knowing he had Mickens at Notre Dame. Not that he like needed someone that he knew on staff to feel comfortable. He's going to fit in wherever he goes. If he would have gone to LSU, he would have been fine. But I certainly think, you know, from a family perspective, the Fickell Freeman families are really close. Their kids are all really close. Their wives are close. So, you know, I know Mickens doesn't have six kids, you know, so it's not like they'll be matching one for one. But I'm sure it helped knowing that, like, Mickens' family would be here and they'd have someone, you know, from a family personal side to go along with. And yeah, I guarantee you Mickens was, you know, advocating for Marcus, not that he needed to the Notre Dame staff, but I'm sure he was also filling him in on how things worked on that end. So I know it had an impact, and I don't know to what degree. I don't know that it wouldn't have happened without Mickens, but it certainly didn't hurt Notre Dame's cause having him there.
We've heard the name. I mean, most of us recognize the name from his playing days because it wasn't too long ago, and he was a major player on a team that played on a big stage pretty much every year he was there. I voted him number one for the Broyles Award trophy this year. I know he finished as a finalist. Somewhere along the last 2 years, I think it's fair to say is when like he really became this national name, this can't miss name that everyone was going to eventually back up the Brinks trucks for, so to speak. How is he, and yeah, everything you said, he sounds very level-headed. He doesn't sound too full of himself, but how has he handled this this past year or two where, you know, every cycle there's a guy, right, who, you know, Joe Brady last year, you know, whoever else the year before. How has Marcus Freeman handled being that guy who's everyone was waiting to see what he was going to do next? And, you know, again, there sounded like there was a pretty decent chance he was going to come back to Cincinnati and would have been just fine doing that. How has he handled all the attention?
Yeah, I mean, way better than most 34, 35-year-olds in his position should handle it, honestly. You're right. He's always been, you know, humble and level-headed. And I think he always just understood he didn't need to be in a rush. Like, you know, it wouldn't benefit him long-term to kind of rush out and take the first thing, whether it was a Group of Five head coaching job or kind of the first Power Five coordinator assistant job he could get. After the 2018 season, he got offered a position coach job at Ohio State, you know, go back coach linebackers there. And obviously that, you know, he went to Ohio State. That would have been huge for him. But again, I think he was always kind of thinking long-term, how do I become a head coach? And he didn't know if that was the right way to go. He could have made a lot more money going to Michigan State last year or going to coach linebackers of the Titans. So it wasn't like money was always drawing him away. And I know I've mentioned it a couple of times, but Fickell's a big part of that. You know, when everything was going down with Michigan State last year and before that, Fickell had gotten interviews and interest from Baylor, Florida State, and that was just last offseason. And I asked Marcus, like, why is he different? Why is Fickell, who ended up staying at Cincinnati and now seems like he might be there for a little bit, what separates him? And, you know, Freeman said he has zero ego. All these interviews that he did, kind of all the attention he's got, we never hear any of that from Fickell. Like, he's never leaking what he's doing or trying to leverage things. He was always really quiet about it. When he signed his extension a couple months ago, he wouldn't put out a press release kind of like spiking the football for it. He just wouldn't let the PR staff do it, much to their angst. And I just think Marcus learned so much from him, football-wise, personally. You know, he always references him as a husband and a father. And so I think as much attention as he got, and all of it was well-deserved, he saw the way Fickell has handled things, especially the past couple of years. And I think he just really took a lot of lessons and pride in that. And I think we're still going to see that with him at Notre Dame too.
All right. I want to put you on the spot this, because I mean, these coaching hires happen. And do we know how they're going to work out? I guess not really. And yet, like, is there any way this doesn't work out for Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman?
Yeah, I don't see how it doesn't. And again, maybe I'm like too close to it because, you know, I've been covering him here for a few years, and just it's been pretty much like green lights for Cincinnati football wise the past 3 years. So what happens when people, you know, run into some adversity and how do they handle that? I don't know, but he was in a bad situation at Purdue, where the coach got fired, you know, before he came to Cincinnati, and he was a position coach there. So it's not like he's just hasn't had anything he's had to deal with. All those things that we've talked about, the location, kind of his skill set, what he does well, what Notre Dame needed. Yeah, I'm with you. I can't really envision a way where it doesn't go well. I'm guessing Notre Dame's going to be in the same situation sooner rather than later that Cincinnati was in, which is just hoping they don't lose him to a head coaching position.
It's funny Pete brought that up, because that kind of dovetails with what I was going to say. I mean, Marcus Freeman, at least from what we know about him around Notre Dame, sounds very similar to what we knew about Clark Lee as he was leaving, as far as just really hard to find someone say so much as a bad word about him. Universally liked, really different and humble in the way they go about their business. But Clark Lee was a complete wild card when he got promoted 3 years ago. He never called a defensive play before. No one knew how this would work out. It was a home run. And he ends up getting a Power Five head coaching job in 3 years, which brings me to my next question to put you on the spot. Where do you see Marcus Freeman 3 years from now?
Yeah, I have to imagine he's a head coach, probably not at Ohio University, like I envisioned at one point. But it's funny, you know, part of the thing with Fickell is it always felt like he was a Big Ten coach. So, you know, that's why Michigan State was such a big deal when that opened up, because it seemed like a perfect fit for him. Obviously, like Ohio State and Notre Dame, too, would be fits for Fickell. Freeman's like that a little bit, but I don't put him in that same, you know, box. I wouldn't be shocked if he, like, ended up at a Pac-12 school or or an SEC school or an ACC school or something like that. You know, I kind of think he's going to go what makes the most sense for him. But I don't necessarily see him being confined to that like Midwest style of football, Big Ten style of football, you know, moving forward. He's kind of too young for that, honestly. So I would say he's going to be either a head coach or on the precipice of being a head coach at a power conference school in 3 years. But I also, maybe this is because I'm too close to it or recency bias. You know, if 10 years from now or 15 years from now, we're talking about him being like one of the best coaches and head coaches in college football, that will not shock me at all in the least.
Did you, not to cut you off here, but did you talk about the tight end last year? I mean, does he actually have NFL interest right now? Or not right now, obviously he just took a new job, but I mean, could you see him at the NFL or does he seem like a guy who's a college lifer?
Yeah, no, I could see him there. I think he obviously is really good at the recruiting aspect. I also think it's not a stretch to think at some point, you know, a few years down the road, he might get a little bit tired of it or something like that. So I wouldn't be shocked to see him end up in the NFL at some point eventually. But on the same token, I wouldn't be shocked if he was kind of like a college football lifer either, because the way he can connect with kids and that kind of like program building thing that they were able to do at Cincinnati, I think he really likes that part of it too.
So, is it too early to look forward to Cincinnati's trip to South Bend next year? Or, I mean, can we preview this already?
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to traveling anywhere next year, hopefully. But no, I mean, it was going to be interesting anyways, just because of the whole Brian Kelly, situation. And then Mike Mickens being there just added another little
Mike Dembrock to it.
Mike Dembrock's there. John Tenuta's still kind of hanging around.
There's an analyst.
As an analyst, at least this year he was. So there's plenty of connections between the two staffs that would have made it interesting anyways. And this is only going to add to it. And I'm interested to see how the team, I realize it's months away, but how does Cincinnati's defensive players specifically kind of respond to it? Or are they going to try and use it as some motivation thing? I mean, I can't imagine there's much of any ill will at all with this situation. It would have been a tough game for Cincinnati anyways. Now it feels even tougher considering the guy who's on the other side kind of has the keys to everything that they usually do. But I'm looking forward to it just from my perspective, but from a game perspective, there's going to be far too many storylines to even cover like in the week leading up to it.
We'll have to get you back on the pod as a two-time guest then. A week after we bring back someone else we had on this week, which was Jesse Temple, you've got Wisconsin Notre Dame September 25th, the Jack Cohn Bowl, followed by Notre Dame Cincinnati October 2nd. The Jackie Heisman campaign has already planted its flag at the Shamrock after this week and after the odds came out for 2021. Justin, that's all I have. Pete, I don't know if you have any other questions, but I do want to shout out Justin for our listeners here. One of the few who had Ian Book on his Heisman straw poll ballot throughout the course of the season. So a friend of the program, a friend of the Irish, clearly, and a friend of Marcus Freeman's, which can bode well as well.
I think it was only a couple weeks when a few other schools were like taking massive COVID hiatuses, but hey, they beat Clemson. They were the number two team in the country for a while. I'm all about kind of the most valuable player type, aspect of the Heisman. And I have no shame having Ian on my ballot, my straw ballot.
Or Desmond Ritter, who's coming back now. And I mean, that's one of Notre Dame's tougher games. I'm not saying Cincinnati's going to win, but when you look at 1 through 12, that's a top three opponent probably on Notre Dame's schedule next year.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to get some like top 10 ranking, preseason rankings and attention, Cincinnati, as they should. They got Myjai Sanders back today too, who's a big time defensive end who was considering declaring. So losing Marcus Freeman will hurt them just, from an on-field perspective, because that's how good he was. But Cincinnati, they have every chance to be just as good, if not better, next year than they were this year. So that should make the trip to South Bend pretty fun.
Yeah, it should be a good game. It's kind of one of those sneaky good games on Notre Dame's schedule next year, with Wisconsin and USC and Stanford mixed in there too. So, Justin, thanks for taking some time for us on Friday night to deal with a little breaking news, and it gives our listeners some perspective on Marcus Freeman, because this is probably like Notre Dame's biggest coaching hire win since
Brian Kelly.
Brian Kelly. I mean, it's been a long time since they have.
Cincinnati fans are going to love that. They really appreciate it. Go out and
be like, all right, we're like, they got the guy that everybody wanted. That's just sort of like has not been Notre Dame's MO recently. So it's a big move, and hopefully Marcus Freeman is. Maybe he will be a future guest on the Shamrock, much like his predecessor Clark Lee was, and we saw he got the Shamrock bump moving on to Vanderbilt. So we can only hope that Marcus Freeman will join us too. So, Justin, again, thanks for the time. We will definitely be talking to you soon. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
That was Justin Williams, our Cincinnati beat writer at The Athletic, with some pretty detailed and awesome insights on Notre Dame's new defensive coordinator, Marcus Freeman. And I guess, Matt, before we get into more Freeman talk, Terry Joseph is on his way to Texas. I believe Football Scoop had that first. I was able to confirm with the parents of some players that Joseph has reached out to let them know that he is on his way to Texas. So could be a defensive staff makeover a little bit. We'll see what happens with Mike Elston. But back to Marcus Freeman, like I guess I'll ask you the same thing I asked Justin at the end. Like, is there any way this doesn't work out? Like, famous last words, but yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's my... I take a step back here and I say this with the knowledge that, and I've repeated this throughout the course of this year when it comes to head coaching hires elsewhere. Rarely does a home run hire as a head coach ever work out. Right? Like, when's the last home run hire that worked out the way people thought? Urban Meyer at Ohio State, right? Like, I mean, Tom Herman at Texas, Scott Frost at Nebraska, Chip Kelly at UCLA, Jim Harbaugh at Michigan, you go on and on and on. Like, all the can't miss hires.
I mean, Brian Kelly was a can't miss hire when they hired him.
Yeah, 12 years ago or 11 years ago. Like, so yeah, Urban Meyer's the last one.
It took a while for that not to miss, right? Like,
right. So, but that's where a head coach, where you know, if you've never been a head coach before, you know, you never really know until you do it. This is a defense coordinator, a guy who has proven himself at not the highest level, but pretty close to it. I mean, Cincinnati, as Justin said, they're a group of five school in name. They're pretty known commodity in college football.
I mean, they're superior to Boise State, really. Like, from, I'm talking about Boise State, like back in the day.
It's not a MAC school. It's not a party crasher, so to speak. They have been, they've been good through a number of different coaches and have even survived bad coaches since Brian Kelly left there. So they're good, and he's done a really good job there. And I mean, it's the five-star prospect of assistant coach hires. Like, there's everyone knew that this guy was going to be the number one target of a number of programs that had openings, of which there were many, many blue bloods at that. And look, there were reports out there today and whispers, even from people I was talking to at South Bend, saying it looks like he's leading LSU. And with the benefit of the hindsight, was that, you know, some funny business by an agent? More often than not, that is the case. I don't know if that was the case here, but very well could have been. But ultimately, at the 11th hour, Friday night, I mean, rarely do you get a positive Friday night press release.
It's like a news dump time.
I mean, Michigan extended Jim Harbaugh Friday night. Okay. That's where you put that kind of news. Notre Dame just got the best coordinator hire in the country. I mean, good for them. I'd love to know the behind the scenes of how it all went down. I mean, we were talking throughout the day as well. And look, I think he's not Luke, as Justin said, he's not Luke Fickell in that, like, he'd probably only leave for Ohio State or this in the Midwest. Like, he's young enough and open enough where I think, you know, he would take the best job, whatever that is. I just had a hard time knowing what we know, seeing LSU as the best job for reasons other than financial. And we don't know what exactly his deal will be at Notre Dame. But LSU is... Look, they won national championship last year. All credit to them. I'm not going to rag on that program, but like, they're kind of a hot mess right now. Like, is that, if you're an up and coming guy, is that where you want to go to bolster your case and then become a head coach? Or do you want to go to what's been one of the most stable programs in the country the last 4 years that has had a habit of promoting their coordinators to later becoming head coaches elsewhere, particularly the guy who you'll be succeeding.
Yeah, and a habit of patience, right? Like, Notre Dame is not in a doesn't shuffle people out the door here. Like,
no, and
you get a lot of time.
You get time. You get smart kids. I mean, I'm not saying they're not smart elsewhere, but like the problems you have at LSU are more unique than the problems than you have at Notre Dame and vice versa. Like, you know, there's more of a known quantity with Notre Dame right now than there is with LSU. And I think, I don't know what the money is. I mean, an educated guess, I would say, knowing what LSU paid Bill Pelini, it was probably in the $2 million a year range for Marcus Freeman at LSU. I have a hard time seeing Notre Dame coming up to that level, but 1.5 maybe. I mean, if you're talking about a guy who's in high demand, you need to at least get a little bit close to market value. And I mean, it sounded like this was the place he wanted to be. And so if you were to lose him over, and I don't want to be trivial when I say only a couple $100,000, because that's a lot of money, but if you're Notre Dame and you want to win and compete for national championships, these are the investments you got to make. And whatever they did worked, because ultimately they landed their guy. And yeah, I mean, the only way I could see it not working is if he gets on there on staff and sees some guys he doesn't like, who don't like him, who resent him, and, you know, becomes a cancerous situation. But, you know, as you alluded to at the beginning of this, we might be looking at a completely different defensive staff next year at Notre Dame. And our friend Adam Ritterberg at ESPN just tweeted that as we speak right now. And we'll monitor that over the next couple of days. But that might be the case for Notre Dame on defense in 2021.
Yeah, it's funny. I was texting with a mutual friend about return on investment and the business sense of Notre Dame football and, you know, investing money back into your product. And this person was a little bit frustrated because this was the time of day when it looked like Marcus Freeman was going to LSU, and just how it doesn't make any sense to not put money back in your product. That's not a good business decision. I was like, you know, it's like, if only Notre Dame had a good business school, then like you could sort of get these lessons across. And he's like, good point. But I give Notre Dame a ton of credit, and it's, you know, it's not just Brian Kelly, it's Jack Swarbrick. You know, it's the people that have to write the checks, not just the people that promise the contracts, for Notre Dame to step up to the plate on this. Cause I mean, I sort of see it. Weren't we sort of led to believe that Notre Dame was willing to go to 1.5 with Mike Elko when he went to Texas A&M?
I think he ended up with 1.8 in his initial deal at A&M. And I mean,
it was like an averaging 2 over 3 years kind of deal.
The way it was described to me at the time was, you know, A&M just went to a place we just quite weren't comfortable with yet. And I don't know how much of that was, do we want to get in the business of paying coordinators $2 million versus do we want to get in the business of doubling a guy's salary who's only been here for 1 year when we think we can replace him, which they did. So I don't know. I think each situation's a little bit unique, but again, this is the game. Notre Dame has money. It's obviously their choice how to allocate it, but you know, when are you going to get the best defense coordinator on the market in the country? A guy who's still 2 days shy of his 35th birthday, and who, if we want to play the long game here, plays his cards right, could be fighting with Clark Lee to come back here and lead this place 5 years from now, right? Wow. I mean, why not, right? Let's just throw that
spend
one out
it all
there.
The way forward to 2025. Yeah, no, I mean, it'll be interesting to see where that all goes, but I think for Notre Dame, like, I think it's overrated to sort of like win the moment, because ultimately if you're losing in the third quarter against Florida State, no one is going to remember how you felt on January.
If they're 8th. Losing the third quarter against Florida State, we'll have a lot of other issues to address. But my
point is, like, this hire is the equivalent of winning a major bowl game on your off season, where suddenly everything feels good. You have some momentum, some positive vibes, some like something to build off of. And that's not insignificant to me, especially the way the season ended with the losses to Clemson and Alabama. I think it should put Brian Kelly in a good mood and sort of cast the program in a much different light than it was. I mean, it's amazing. It was basically 1 week ago, I was sitting in a Courtyard Marriott in Dallas, and we were talking about the Alabama game and like what a mess everything was. 7 days later, everything's great. And look, this is still going to be very much sort of a rebuilding roster for Notre Dame. They lose a lot, especially on the offensive side of the ball. But man, this to me, this just sorts gets you 9 months of goodwill if you're Notre Dame football, all the way up until kickoff against Florida State. The story around Notre Dame football is they hired the biggest name that was available, and it was a real show of intent that Notre Dame is serious about climbing the mountain all the way to the top in college football.
Yep. A week ago, I mean, a little bit before this time, you were asking Brian Kelly, what is the first next step? This is the answer.
Hey, you're welcome. Why did you say hire Marcus Freeman?
Just as you motivated them to victory over Iowa State last bowl game. 12 months later, we come full circle. But that is it, right? I mean, and you pointed this out on Twitter, I think. Brian Kelly was very deliberate in using the word recruiting in his quote in the press release. Because, this is the first next step. And, again, we don't know what the defensive staff will look like, and that's going to be very interesting to monitor if, you know, it ends up being a completely new staff on that side of the ball for the most part. But, you know, how much of a say, if any, will Marcus Freeman have in hiring the staff, and how important will recruiting be in obtaining those hires? Because again, especially defensively, I mean, this is a damn good coaching staff from an X's O standpoint. Or say it was damn good coaching staff from an X's O standpoint in from 2017 to 2020. But everyone wants to know what that next step is, and it starts with going out and getting better players, and Marcus Freeman can do that, and we'll see who he ends up working with on the defense side of the ball of Notre Dame next year. But if you're Notre Dame right now, you've got one coordinator under 35 and another under 30. Good place to be. Those are two guys who could be working at a lot of places right now. They chose to come to Notre Dame, and we'll see what happens. But you told me after the Alabama game, again, 7 days ago, we would have to do two emergency podcasts in the next 7 days about Notre Dame football. I would think scandal for someone, academic impropriety for someone, an arrest for someone, a firing. Like, good news does not happen in the offseason unless you're signing a five-star prospect. And this is what Notre Dame did. They signed a five-star prospect who will help get them in position to get more five-star prospects and win a lot of football games. But especially early in the Brian Kelly era, we had a lot of late Friday nights where we were working and holiday weekends where we were working and pulled away from whatever it was we were doing because of bad news. And this is the complete opposite of that. And it just shows you how quickly things can change, because the sky was falling. People were hopefully heeding Brian Kelly's post-game advice and restraining themselves, so to speak. But 7 days later, the narrative has completely changed. Oh, by the way, the season's still going on. There's a championship game Monday night featuring one of those teams from last Friday that will be interesting to watch. But Notre Dame took one step closer to finding themselves in that position today.
Yeah, it really is majorly significant news for Notre Dame. It's I think we mentioned in the first segment, and we talked about it before we hit record, like you said, the biggest recruitment since Jalen Smith. I go back to Manti just in the way this felt like it was slipping away and then came back at the very end. But if either of those turn out to be semi-accurate, Notre Dame is in a great spot. Allows a couple bald guys to get over their Clark Lee heartbreak too. So, I mean, that's not an insignificant thing.
I don't know how I can top that. hopefully there's a bald secondary coach coming in to replace Terry Joseph.
Another topic for another show. But we'll be back next week to sort of wrap up the everything season with the national championship game having come and gone. And we're going to try to have our good buddy John Walters come on the podcast to talk about that, author of The Bubble Screen on The Athletic. So, yeah, have a good weekend, everybody. First weekend of the offseason. If you're a Notre Dame fan, it was a good one. And then you can enjoy the game Monday night knowing that Marcus Freeman is your new defensive coordinator.
Let's do it. Let's have a nice, quiet weekend. And again, revenge weeks back-to-back next year. September 25th, October 2nd, Wisconsin, Cincinnati. two toughest games of the year for Notre Dame? I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's a stretch to think they might be.
Could be. I mean, hey, let's see what happens with Mike Elston. Could he be at Purdue?
You know who will not be at Purdue?
Yeah, exactly. He who will not be spoken, his name will not be spoken. So until next week, he's Matt Fortuna. I'm Pete Sampson. You've been listening to another episode of The Shamrock. Thanks for being with us.